Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fury, and yes, we are back again. We're back with our weekly look of Non-League Football, and it's a welcome back to Mr. Dave Anderson.
Good evening.
It's a good evening. It's a weird world. We'll learn that through the show. We're still finding our feet. We're still finding our way as to where we're heading, what we're doing. Plenty of travel for you in recent weeks, though, Dave. I mean, the slightly older listeners will remember Judith Chalmers, and you appear to be Judith Chalmers without the tan, I think, at the moment.
Judith Charmless, maybe.
I'm sure that's probably how the referees refer to you in their reports to the FA. But
yeah, good thing. But no, listen, I've been fortunate. I was down in Devon a couple of weeks ago. Last week, I was in Italy for a few days, and next week I'm going to St Andrews, so I'm getting it all in. You know, I'm going to play some golf up there. So yeah, I've been fortunate where others haven't. But that was always the plan, sort of to, you know, when I finish playing, to sort of scout about a bit. But I have seen a bit of football, you know, and I've also keeping tabs on my old club's new stadium, AFC Wimbledon.
Lots of photos are being circulated.
Oh, unbelievable looking, you know. And again, just the end of a magnificent story. But I've actually got to watch. I'll tell you what's good. I've watched a couple of live games, but I've also watched a couple of games online on stream. Mm. A couple of conference games, and very good. Like, really enjoyed it.
You're not playing any of this fake fan stuff in the background, though, are you? Just to make it feel like you are at the game.
No. Well, to be fair, I played golf last week with Matt Gray and Jason Goodliff, mm-hmm. Obviously manager and assistant manager at Sutton, and my mate PJ, who was playing with us, said to the lads, are you finding it difficult, you know, in an empty stadium? And Jason Goodliff said, no, he said, I spent most of my career in empty stadiums, so I'm okay with it, you know. But it's been fabulous to sort of to be able to watch the online stuff, you know, and see the games, and hopefully we get supporters back in sooner rather than later. But I still think there's a vehicle for to keep streaming. Because it's well worth, I think it was under a tenner for the Sutton game, you know.
And you could buy your own Peronis, I'm sure, to drink alongside it.
Well, you know, you'd have to prove that. Yes, you can, you know. I watched Wilson away at Yeovil, and it was free on YouTube, and it was good coverage. And I watched Sutton play Notts County just the other night, and again, I think it was 9:50 or something like that. Good, and it's all good, and it's supporting the clubs who are obviously having a hard time and just trying to keep positives out of which is a pretty awful time for everyone.
Yeah, it is good that there is a mechanism by which people can watch it. It was great, like you mentioned, that Yeovil thing. And I know clubs are desperate for as many revenue streams as possible, so I don't expect everybody to be streaming everything for free. But the odd one, it just gets people, well, understanding what non-league football's about. You know, if they haven't been to a non-league game before, but they're missing their football, there's an opportunity of grabbing hold of them and embracing them and bringing them into the non-league family.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there'll be people who, you know, who are addicted to their football, like many of us, you know, have been and are. But there'll be people who can't go to watch their Premier League sides because of the situation, and will go to their local games, and some of them will stay there because we've said many times before, it's more personable, you know, you're closer, I just think it's an easier ride, and it's better fun, and and it's more real. You know, it's how's that saying go? Real for the fans, by the fans. You know, so I think it's I think it could be a time when we pick up some people from the dark side.
So let's start this week's proceedings off with an old friend of the show. Nearly a whole year in his new job, now seemingly well settled both on the field and off the field. I talk, of course, of the man who has led, well, we'll discuss that definition in a moment, his side to the top of the National League, unbeaten and 10 points from 4 games. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Manager at Hartlepool United, Dave Challenor.
Evening, guys. How are you?
We're good, Dave. Now let me start with leading the team. You started the season with a 3-match touchline ban, but 3 wins from 3. You must have those guys really well trained.
Thanks for reminding me of that. yeah, I did. No, I think circumstances are very different. Being up in the stand is something that I won't want to do again. It's certainly a lot easier with no supporters, and I've got to be honest, because although you can't shout and things like that, you're not allowed to do that, you can get messages down to the bench, but I think in normal circumstances, I suppose, going through your coaching stuff and your badges you do, you almost get told as best as possible that your work you do during the week ultimately sets you up for a Saturday, and there's not a great deal you can, or a massive impact you can have from the sidelines on a Saturday. You get a chance probably at half time and a chance before the game maybe to give some things across, but in the main, the work you do day to day on the training pitch, and obviously we benefit from that because we're able to do it full time, means that on a Saturday you're hoping that the preparation you've done means the players can go out and carry out the plan you're trying to work to. It's certainly helped us in the start of the season. It has certainly helped in the fact that some of the players we had from the back end of last year are still with us, and they know what we wanted to do. And to be able to have that knowledge, it only adding a few faces into that first starting 11, obviously has helped, and that continuity has been massively important for us.
And Dave, I mean, you said that you'd much rather be in the dugout, and you know, I understand that. I used to find, and I had the odd touchline bomb myself, it has to be said, I used to enjoy the view from up high. I think you see the game better, you know. What I found with myself was it made me not as volatile because I'm away from the cold face, if you like, and unless you want to jump up and down. But the reason I ended up back in the dugout was that the players hear your voice. They did. Well, mine's a bit more distinctive than yours, but they could pick up the. Tell me your reasons why not the stand and why the dugout.
I think as you said for that reason. The game on Tuesday, I could have been allowed in the technical area, but I chose where our changing rooms are. We are up at the back of our stand, and it's like you say, it's a great view. The one benefit, and I stood up there. To be fair, the one benefit I had now with not having a touchline band was that I could shout, and like I said, the players from there could hear you. But if you're, again, in normal circumstances, if you were sat at the back of a stand with 1,000 fans in front of you, your voice would be, like you say, would be lost in amongst a whole load of other voices. So, yeah, you can have a more of an influence from the touchline. But, yeah, as you say, the view from up there, it gives you a lot different angle, a much better angle just in terms of, I suppose you see more off the ball stuff. The view at the far side is obviously a lot better. And like I say, we're in a circumstance at the moment where it's not ideal having supporters. It's not great having supporters because you lose the atmosphere. But certainly from a coaching perspective, it does allow you to take up a position where you can see what's going on and you can get your message across, because I've got a pretty loud voice. And like I say, in an echoey stand, they can hear me, although I know on occasions they'll choose to ignore me, which only angers me even more, to be honest.
yeah, I don't think you're on your own there. But
we've all done that. We've all done that.
Absolutely. But you know, and it is, you know, I don't think there's anyone in football who wants to play in an empty stadium, because we've all egos and we're show-offs and we like the atmosphere and what goes with it. But tell me the good stuff that your team have dealt with in an empty stadium, and the stuff where you feel you've struggled a little bit.
I think, to be fair, at the moment we've not really struggled. The performances we put in have been really good. I think for as strange as it sounds, for some people playing in an empty stadium, they'll improve from it a little bit. They'll benefit from it. We know, and I said this when I first went into the club up there, that the supporters up there are unbelievable, massively fanatical. But as much as they can be your sort of 12th man, if you like, they can be a bit of a millstone around the players' necks at times, because if away teams come and do start well, all of a sudden supporters can become a little bit disgruntled. And I've been there as an opposing manager and know that if you start well, or if you get in front, then supporters, again, like they can everywhere, really can turn, and it can be tough for the home team. And I think especially when such a club such a size of Hartlepool and the history they've had in terms of being on the brink of the Championship at certain points, all of a sudden to be where they are now, the supporters, it does take a little bit of getting used to and accepting where you're at. I think at the back end of last season, we really got a feeling of something special was brewing, and we got the supporters feeling we were going in the right direction, and the atmosphere in the ground, regardless of what was going on, was massive. And we've had a really, really good run at home since we've been there, really, which is something that's not happened for a long time, because I think finally they've now realised where we are and what we need to be successful, and ultimately they've got a team on the pitch that they can associate to and they can sort of link with, and like I said, that's been really good. So we have sort of missed that. I think that, again, speaking to Alan Devonshire the other day when we were down at Maidenhead, I think the difficult thing sometimes for players can be when maybe you're in front and you're under a little bit of pressure, the crowd sometimes can just give you that little bit to sort of hang on, to see it through. Likewise, if you're in a position where you maybe out the game a little bit and you needed something to turn, a tackle or a shot can get the crowd back into it, and it can change the momentum of the game. I don't think you have that. So I think it does become more of a mental test for players, especially if the game's not going your way. How can you turn it around, because you're not getting any influence from off the pitch, if you like.
Yeah, no, I get all of that, Dave. You just said there, you know, about being down at Maidenhead, and there's another thing that jumped into my head is the travel arrangements now. You know, I'd imagine you travelled the day before the game. How on earth has that changed? Is that still pretty normal?
It is. We've got to get used to it in our league, the fact we've got 15 overnight stays from 22 away games. So we don't have much choice. I suppose the same things will apply. You're wearing masks on buses. A little bit different in terms of eating arrangements. You're in sort of separate rooms. The big difference is match days and I suppose the dressing rooms and how that works. And everywhere is different because everywhere are different facilities, different within the ground, old grounds, new grounds. Some are set up to be able to deal with bigger numbers. Others aren't when you're social distancing. So that's the biggest difference, is that the actual match day stuff rather than the stuff in hotels. We just you just have to be more vigilant in terms of how you're doing things and as best as possible. Try and you can only look after yourself. You can only make sure you do things right, because again, when you're in a hotel, you're in an environment with the public are in there, but in the main, we're separated off where we eat and where we are, so we can control that. And like I say, it's something we have to sort of get used to, really. I think it's going to become the norm a little bit. So it's not been too much of a upheaval or distraction, in fairness.
Yeah, we've heard much about the club struggling, and you've mentioned, was it 15 overnight stays there? And Hartlepool have had more than their fair share over recent years. How is the club coping off the field? And is that something you try and keep at arm's length?
Yeah, I think where the club is at the moment and what is very sort of very bare bones. I think since the chairman came in 3 years ago, and I'm not speaking out of turn when I say the club's probably kept a League One infrastructure off the pitch for the last few years. whether this has brought the sort of situation we have at the moment has brought it on, or whether again to a certain degree the chairman knew things had to change with the investment he'd been making, then lots of staff have moved on, and we very much are bare bones. I think what we've got to do now is, there is a blank canvas. It's now a case of getting the right staff in the right places to be able to function, because we obviously still have harbour ambitions of being the club being back where it was once before. So you have to make sure that the infrastructure off the pitch is right, because otherwise things get missed, and that ultimately can result in something that then affects things on the pitch. So we know where, like I say, we know where we're at there. I think, like I said, the good thing for us in terms of a football environment, we're sort of away from the ground on a day-to-day basis. So we have obviously the training ground where we're on a little sanctuary. We can focus on what we do. We've got a really good management team that I trust implicitly with what we're doing. We're all on the same page, and the players have really bought into what we want to do. So as much as, like I say, well, it's on the wrong way, the more we can stay away from the ground and away from the politics and the off-field stuff, if you like, and just concentrate on what we control. We speak a lot about us controlling the controllables, if you like, and not worry about different variables. We can't do much about what happens at the ground on a day-to-day basis. So concentrate on us. And like I say, just try and keep churning away, keep working hard, keep trying to improve. And there's things off the pitch, like I say, we'll take care of themselves. There's people in, or the right people in right positions now, and they're obviously got to take the club forward in that way. And hopefully, like I say, the two things run together and we have success in all areas.
Yeah, it's been quite a year for you, really, hasn't it? I mean, it's been quite a year for everybody. But when we spoke to you, you'd almost been appointed, but hadn't quite been appointed when you first took on the Hartlepool job, and there were still, you know, little bits and pieces still being sorted out. And then obviously we had the lockdown, the restart, but you sound so settled. You sound like everything. Chairman wise and the board wise, you've got your own team around there, the team there. Are you in a good place to go forward? What are the aims for this season?
Yeah, we're in a good place because we believe in what we do. I think we're realistic. I think sometimes you can get ahead of yourself a little bit, and I think that's a job for the supporters to do. It's certainly not a job for us to do. We're pretty grounded. We know where we're at. We've got there was a significant reduction in the budget from last year to this year. I don't want to say where we are in terms of our budget compared to the rest, because everyone's very different. But we're confident in the group we've got. We know that we're gonna carry a small squad. We've got a small budget, so we have to carry a small squad. So we're definitely gonna need a little bit of luck in terms of injuries, in terms of suspensions and things like that. But what I feel we've got at the moment is we've got a really, really fit group of players that are being able to produce game on game. Some, like I say, we use the data and the stats to back up everything we do, really. And some of the things they're producing, we're fit now. We're not sort of, I suppose, going to be 7 or 8 games in when we hit peak fitness. We're fit. And it showed that on the pitch. We really run over teams at the back end of games. So listen, I have true belief in the players we've got. We've again scoped within what we have to be a little bit reactive, and if we need to bring players in to help us along on the way, then we'll do that. But we've got a settled group that's got good competition. And what you don't want to do is unsettle a settled group. Like I said, we started the season really, really well. And there's lads within there haven't had their opportunities yet. And I've said to them all, I said at the start of the season, within the first month, obviously you have to leave players out. I couldn't guarantee them a game. I couldn't guarantee them a game within the first few weeks, but I could guarantee an opportunity probably through either October or into November. And that'll probably come next week in the FA Cup and in the FA Trophy. And that'll be their chance to then say, you know, I mean, to show what they can do.
It is such an intense fixture list at the start that you absolutely will have to rotate at times, won't you?
Yeah. I think that again, the way the league's set up, the start of the league's always going to be the first couple of months are loaded with fixtures. I think the concern that I have certainly is you look where it is now, the back end's loaded up. So the fixtures you have in April and May now, there's already, I think, seven fixtures put in for May. If you have a decent run in the cup competition, or we have a tough winter, April, May could be, that's where I think there could potentially be issues. Listen, hopefully we get to April and May and have that problem to deal with. But that's when you could become a bit stretched. I suppose the luxury for us at this level certainly is that we don't have a transfer window as such, and we can bring bodies in as and when, barring the sort of registration deadline, which will be a month before the back end of the season. So yes, we'll need everyone now, certainly. And like I say, we'll need to be on the ball in terms of knowing when and where we can bring players in, and players that can certainly affect what we do. I think we've done that really, really well in terms of loan signings over the past few years. I'm really happy with the loan signings we've currently got in. Cause I think that's a market that certainly for a club like us, that you know, trying to protect the smallest budget that you need to use. And like I say, hopefully we can continue to do that.
How's that going to work though, Dave, when you say you're bringing in loan signings? Because normally someone would go and have a look at a lad before you signed him on. It's not as easy now to go and watch an under-23s game if you're bringing someone in maybe from a pro club, or even to look at a club in step two and see if you can bring somebody up.
No, it is. It's going to become more and more tough, especially, like you say, the current situation. Your recruitment, again, will change. I suppose, potentially, what you'll do, and from my perspective, you'll maybe look at lads who have played at this level and gone into the Football League. Maybe it hasn't worked, and you know that they've played games at the level where they've played men's football. In other instances, listen, you have to take a bit of a chance. You trust certain people. You'll speak to people at clubs where players are, and take their opinion on things. And listen, everything's a bit of a gamble in terms of loan signings, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. I think the potential sweetener at the moment will be that clubs are being pretty realistic about sort of wage coverage and things like that. Ultimately, what clubs can't afford to do is just carry players for the sake of carrying players. So they are looking at getting them out. And like I say, some of the Football League clubs have been great in terms of what they've said for National League clubs, and the money that they're looking to take, because they know they're sort of everyone's struggling at the moment. And like I say, I can't, the three clubs we've dealt with in terms of players we've brought in have been brilliant with us, and like I say, hopefully we can repay that with their players getting some good football and progressing, and hopefully getting closer to their first team as a result.
Well, Dave, we could talk forever as we always do, but we better let you get prepared for the weekend. A trip to Barnet. It's always a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll follow your progress and hopefully get you back on very soon.
Brilliant, fella. Nice to speak.
Now, it seemed like forever, but during lockdown, we reported on a few managerial changes, including our next guest, who got his current job, I think, when none of us were even able to meet people from outside our households. From virtual manager to hands-on, well, socially distanced, of course, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Danny Robinson, manager at Hungerford Town.
Yeah, hi, guys. How are you?
We're all good, Danny. Now, when we spoke to you before, we said about taking those two steps up to take this job for the great work that you'd previously done at Thatcham Town. Two games in, two wins already this season, two clean sheets, and it's only goal difference that keeps you off the top of the national south. So not a bad start.
Yeah, it's been a great start. You know, like I said, it's definitely to keep two clean sheets, to score five goals, you know, at any level, at any time of the season, you know, it's always going to be pleasing and everything like that. But we all know, you know, like I said, it's going to be real, real tough. It's a real, real tough league, and it's not where you are now. It's where you end up, you know, in May is the most important. So, you know, no one here is getting carried away or anything like that. Obviously, we know how big a test it is and what a fantastic league this, you know, National League itself is. So, but we take one game as it comes. Old boring, old cliche, as all managers say. And, you know, we're very much looking forward to playing Concord Saturday.
Before Dave jumps in, because he will and he'll take over, and it's fine. It's a relationship. We've learned to live like that. I've got to quickly mention that winning goal at Tunbridge Angels, the 2-0 win. Now, if you haven't seen it, I'll try and tweet it out on Twitter so that the people can see it. It's one of those what happened next clips for a decade or so ahead, isn't it? It's going to be one that people will keep referring back to.
Yeah, it's going to be, surely it's got to be on Question of Sport in a couple of years' time, hasn't it, what happened next? So, great thinking on James Harden's behalf. You know, we didn't hear a whistle. Obviously, you know, the referee didn't give a free kick or anything like that. And it's, you know, I have to give full praise to James for thinking as quickly as what he did and, you know, having the confidence to go ahead and do it. So, you know, I'm praising my player, I'm sure Tunbridge will you know, have a few words with their goalkeeper, because you've always got to play to the whistle, and you know, just an opportunist goal that capped off a very good performance from us.
Yeah, a play to the whistle was the first thing that came into my mind when I saw it. James Harden, it was a 94th minute sub as well, wasn't he? He's come on. There's a debate as to whether there's a foul on the keeper, and that's where Danny's referring to there. But no whistle, as you say. The keeper then rolls the ball out, and James just picks the ball up and slots it home. And if you're teaching any young kid to watch football and what he's got to do, he ticks all the right boxes.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. It is, you know, like I said, it's bizarre stuff. And, you know, I've never seen or managed, you know, in a game where that's actually happened to us before or anything like that. Like I said, it's just real quick thinking from James. And, you know, like I said, as you're youngsters, as you just alluded to, you know, you have to play to the whistle as you're growing up. So, you know, we take it all day long. Just like I say, if my goalkeeper does that, you know, obviously I won't be very, very happy.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. I mean, we spoke at the end of the season just when you went to Conference South, and I said to you, you're going to really enjoy the level because it's a proper level. I watched a lot of games in it last season. It must just be tinged a little bit, the fact, Danny, that there's no one in the grounds. How have you dealt with that as a group and as a manager?
It's strange. You know, it is bizarre. You know, you get all the well wishes on social media and everything like that, but that don't replace anything close to having fans in the, you know, in the stadium and everything like that. And I'm sure the Hungerford faithful would have enjoyed the past two performances, not the one down in Duro, but definitely the last two. And it is very strange. You get there, I find it eerie. I think that's probably the best way I can describe it. You know, it's, you can hear a pin drop sometimes, or you can hear the expletives from the players and things like that. You know, it is very surreal. And I think that's another word I'd use to describe it, very surreal and eerie. And I don't like it. You know, football is about supporters. It's about, you know, passionate people following their clubs, you know, home and away. And, you know, as soon as they can get back into the stadiums, you know, the better for it.
Well, there's got to be an argument, and I don't want to lead you down the path here because you're in management, but there has to be a massive argument for people at the level you're playing at to have supporters through the gate. You know, I've been to watch a couple of games at the level below. Watched Harrogate in the FA Cup, I'm going to say 2 weeks ago. There was, I think, 150 people in the ground. It was a non-league game, great fun. And I think there's got to be a way to say, look, let's limit it to, I think Churchy are playing 400 all ticket at the moment. So there is a way of doing it. And surely they've got to let people in, at least at north and south level, Dan.
Oh, definitely. You know, you ask any club at, you know, National League, North and South level, they will adhere to any restrictions that are put, you know, that, you know, the government and the FA or the National League, you know, want us to adhere to. You know, it's crazy to think that we share, obviously, a stadium with, you know, our Hungerford Town Swifts, who play, you know, Hellenic League level. They can have up to 400 supporters in the same stadium with the same restrictions, with the same, you know, everything going on. But we can't have a single person. You know, you go down the road at Swindon Supermarine and, you know, you can't, they're allowed 600 in, you know, which is, you know, brilliant for them. But as long as, like I say, with us, it's killing us, you know, and truth be told. And,
yeah,
you know, like I said, it's just, it's absolutely just crazy. Someone, surely, with common sense, we'll look at it and think, you know, like I said,
even home supporters only, you know, something like, yeah, no way supporters, home supporters only, you know, there's got to be a way, Tim, you know, it must be so frustrating, like someone like Dan, who's taken the job two levels up, has worked hard to get to it. Well, and I know, listen, there's a bigger thing going on, but surely there's a way of letting people in.
Yeah, there's the irony that as you've already alluded to, there, step four, which is where you've come from, they're the ones with the crowds, and you've gone to step two, expecting crowds around you. And this is the weird world you live in. You sort of touched up on it early on there, Danny. Has it changed the way that your match day works as well? Because normally you get to the ground and everybody will be coming over and wanting a piece of you just to say good luck, blah, 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 blah. Are you now stuck to your mobile phone because it's going off? Do you have to like lock it away and you know, 12 o'clock comes or something and you can't answer any more messages?
I think people would cringe at my match day routine, especially when we're at home. I'm normally here with the birds that are singing in the trees in the morning. So it is. You walk in, obviously your temperature gets ticked, you have to scan. There's only certain areas that people, you know, certain people can go. Obviously, we have to have our passes and everything like that. It's just bizarre. It is bizarre. But once again, we're doing all this. But why can't we have supporters that can, you know, at Hungerford, we can easily fit 600 in, you know, spaced out, you know, socially distanced and everything like that. Easily, you know, every club at National League South and North level will be able to do it. So it just baffles me, you know. And then you see people sat there, you know, at the theatre the other night, you know, listening to Arsene Wenger. Don't get me wrong, I would absolutely love to have gone and done that, being a massive Arsenal fan. And then obviously, and then there's people inside watching ballet. So I just, you know, it my mind, I've said it about 800 times, my mind completely and utterly boggles with it. And, you know, it will, because we've still not heard, you know, how much funding we're going to get from the government or from, you know, how much money is going to be handed down to each individual club. So we're still in limbo. We still don't know. We're playing, you know, on a promise, you know, as my chairman put it the other day. It is all on a promise at the moment. And, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, this promise does come to fruition. And, you know, we do get, obviously, the granting money in by the end of the month. Or, you know, like I say, I can imagine a lot of clubs are on a sticky wicket already.
Yeah, and like your coaching is has probably changed slightly. But it's more scouting, I guess, is the big problem. Because you're having to subscribe to feeds of all the other games? Is that how you're watching clubs?
Yeah, exactly that. You know, you can only go off on highlights, or if you're lucky enough to, you know, like I say, watch the, you know, the full match and everything like that. One thing I am blessed with, I've got three people behind the scenes at Hungerford that do all the analysis, exactly what I want and everything like that. So, you know, tonight, just before we start training, you know, we've got everything we seem to, you know, want to know on Concord. You know, so they sit there, they watch the games and it will break it all down for me and put it in a presentation that we can present to the lads before every training session on the Thursday. So it's all, you know, I'd love being at games. You know, I love being away from the missus. I hope she's not listening, but I do, you know, I enjoy going to games of football, whether it is a step six game or whether it's a step one game. I just absolutely love going to football. So it's just it is very strange that you can't go and watch any other team in our, you know, at our level. But once again, every manager at step three can go to any club they want. So it is just, yeah, it is. Makes it harder. But then on the flip side of it as well, you know, the teams, and when they come up against us, are we a bit more of an unknown quantity because you haven't been able to get to watch us and things like that. So on that side of things, it does play into your hands a little bit.
And obviously, looking at your season start, we've already mentioned about that. But I see you've signed a player well known to me and to yourself as well, Harrison Bailey, coming in to shore up things. Are you still looking to build that squad that you've got there?
Yeah, of course. As a manager, you know, they always tell you, you know, you always want to look out for players and things like that. That don't ever stop. But, you know, with Harrison, I've known him for such a long time, and, you know, wonderful memories of the Vars and, you know, winning the Hellenic League and everything like that. And I just know what I get from him. You know, when all said and done, I'm pretty, you know, you go with what you know as a manager, generally 9 times out of 10. And, you know, he wants to do this level. He's moved more locally to Hungerford. So it kind of, you always get that one lad that lands on your lap a little bit. And then, you know, like I said, he's the two games, obviously he was cup tied for the Touro game, but he's come straight in. for the Chippenham game, and obviously for the Tonbridge game, and he didn't put a foot wrong. You know, he just gives you that stability, that, you know, that hardness into the midfield that, you know, you do need at this level. And, you know, we've been, like with all the players, we've been very, very pleased with him.
Yeah, and you've already alluded to the fact that you've sat probably outside ready to go for training, so we'll let you go. But you mentioned Concord this weekend. They've only played one league game, so those stats going to be fairly limited that you've got on them?
Yeah, fairly limited. You can only go off that. Obviously, I had, in quote brackets, groundhoppers that went to obviously Whiteleaf on Tuesday night to watch them in the FA Cup as well. So yeah, that's all we can do. You know, the two FA Cup games they've had and one league game, so that's all you can really go off. So, but it's so early on in the season. Like you said, it's only, you know, we've only played two, they've only played one, and generally you could do all the scouting, all the stats, all the hard work on a Tuesday and a Thursday night, but come 3 o'clock on a Saturday, it's 11v11, and you know, who takes the chances, who makes mistakes, and, you know, who is the better team. So, like I said, the way that I manage, I always like to give the players no excuses. So I always will turn around and say, look, this, and this, and point out, you know, strengths, weaknesses, and everything like that. Then it's down to them to go and trigger what we want.
Well,
it's still nice, though. Sorry. Still nice, Danny, to win your first two. You know, just to get 6 or 7 points on the board, it just changes the atmosphere around the place. You know, I've been the other way around, where you're 1 point after 3 or 4 games, and it's amazing how the changing room changes, you know. So to be up there must be bubbling.
Yeah, it's massive, because obviously it's well documented what, you know, how before obviously the lockdown and everything like that, it looked like that Hunkerford was going to be relegated, you know. And yeah, so to win the first two, it's a big, I would say, like you just said, it's a big relief more than anything, because I think one thing it does show that we can compete at this level. Everybody knows what, you know, what money restrictions here is Hungerford. That's been clear as day from absolutely day one. You know, even when I took over the job and spoke to you early on, you know, but when I got the job. So to win the first two, you know, I think for the players more than anything, it just gives them belief, you know, belief that they can compete, belief that they can do this level. You know, we had, I think it's 6 players that probably haven't played this level at all start against Chippenham. Wow. So, you know, it's just to go and put in a performance like that. Of course, we know it's going to get tough. It's going to get harder. And, you know, clubs at this level, you know, won't forget once they played us once. So, you know, we do know that. But, you know, at the moment, like I said, they're bounding into training. Everybody's smiling as I watch them walking through the gate at the minute. And, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, we can continue that nice feeling of winning games of football on Saturday.
Well, Danny, we wish you well at the weekend, and thank you once again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. And hopefully we can speak to you again later on in the season, and you'd be just as happy.
Fingers crossed. Cheers, fellas. Thanks so
cheers,
much anyway.
Cheers, Danny.
So, of course, every week the goalposts are moving. I'm talking, obviously, metaphorically, but, actually, I wouldn't put it past the Football Authority to even make up a new law about moving the goalposts. But anyway, we'll cross that another day. Moving rules and guidance in terms of how we can watch football, who can watch football, where, what restrictions, and the whole world's fluid at the moment. And this week we learnt about the government's new tiering systems, and many held their breath when the Liverpool region was placed into the highest tier, impacting but not halting, thankfully, for our next guest side. It's a welcome to the chairman at City of Liverpool FC, Paul Manning. Welcome, Paul.
Hello, Tim. Thank you.
Well, Paul, welcome to the show. Your area is obviously at the highest level of national lockdown, but as we mooted last week, in terms of football, we're already working on COVID-safe grounds, additional measures. Does it really have much impact on you, what's going on around you as a club?
As of right now, that we're talking, Tim, we were already planning towards it. We already had a COVID-safe environment, as you just alluded to. We'd held our Phase 1 game, we'd held our Phase 2 game, so we were up to our maximum attendance of 400. We then voluntarily dropped back down to Phase 2 for an FA Cup game in conjunction with Bootle FC, who are our landlords. We closed the bar and we closed the food for that game. It worked really, really well. Everyone was following the guidelines. Everyone had a mask. We checked 200 temperatures before we came in the ground. everyone was well within the parameters on that. We had a one-way system. Everyone complied with our stewards. So we feel as though we're in a really good position in terms of putting a COVID-safe environment on under the same sort of terms back to phase two now for us with our game in the FA Trophy on Saturday. But with the Tier 3 restrictions, a funny story really, Tim, that your listeners might be interested in. We've been promoting the game and selling tickets online. Obviously, we don't touch cash anymore. And the FA actually rang our club secretary and said, what are you doing? And he said, well, we're putting our game on. And he said, well, on whose authority? He said, well, yours. The FA and the DCMS say we can hold a COVID-safe game up to 400 people. Oh, and what has the council said? And they said, well, the council have been out to see us at our last two games and said we're running a COVID-safe environment and we're okay to proceed. So it was amazing, really. The FA rang to ask us how we were doing it. So funny scenario, really. But we've got public health and always have had public health at the forefront of our minds, Tim, and we're confident, I believe hopeful, that we can pull it off successfully.
Well, that's good to hear, and it's similar to stories that I'm hearing up and down the country. Obviously, I'm involved with my own club, doing exactly the same as you, taking temperatures. And I did a little rant last week and at the opening of the show, just to say that if you're going to football, you're one of the lucky ones, you know. So if you are in a queue, don't be irritated by the man that's taking your temperature, because he doesn't want to be taking your temperature. But if we want to get football on, this is what it's about. And it's good to hear that from you. It's a little disturbing that the authorities aren't as coordinated as non-league clubs, which are run by volunteers. This is the other thing. We're the guys that are trying to juggle everything else with our other jobs, but try and put some smiles on people's faces at the weekend. You mentioned there that you've closed the bar, you've got other restrictions, you've pulled the crowd back in. So, as a club like yours, where you're reliant on revenue streams, how impacting has that been? And is it costing you money? I mean, how are you going to keep going?
Well, it is costing us money, Tim. Luckily, we've for our level of football, and we've only recently got up to step four, but for step six and step five, we were very, very big, I suppose. You know, we had big attendances, we were the biggest in our area. And so revenue streams over the course of the years have accrued. We haven't wasted it on player contracts. Not wasted is probably the wrong way, but we haven't spent it on players' contracts and mad ideas. You know, we've run a very tight ship financially. As a community-owned club, we've been able to benefit from grants coming through community organisations, central funding, and also locally, and that's helped a lot. But of course, revenue streams are impacted. We're no different from any other club. We couldn't go on like this, indefinitely, limiting attendances and all the bar being shut and food being shut. That impacts the ground and the revenues that come through the ground. We can't keep going like this, but for now, we're able to manage the situation successfully. I say so far because everything could change tonight and tomorrow, and on Saturday we could have a COVID case in the ground and everything could fall apart again. So we're certainly not on a high horse or anything like that, Tim. We're just working really, really hard to limit that risk. There's a risk, obviously. The virus is everywhere up here. You talk to everyone you know or know someone who's got it or passed it on or whatever. So we're having to keep to run a very tight ship in practical terms and financially. And as you say, we're all volunteers. The government don't seem to want to make a decision about football. The DCMS gave some good guidance. FA passed it on. The league, the Northern Premier League, passed it down to us, and it's up to us to implement it as best we can. But you're right, Tim. We're the lucky ones. We're able to get out. Football is still a thing. We're still allowed at our level to play football and watch football, and that's a huge benefit to so many people nationally now, to be able to get out in the fresh air and actually enjoy something that they enjoy safely. So we're going to work very, very hard and continue to do so to make sure we can keep that privilege.
Yeah, and For years, we've been banging on about the importance of volunteers. You know, it doesn't matter how good your manager is, doesn't matter how many goals that striker's going to score you this season. If you haven't got the volunteers, none of that lot are playing. And I think it's that hard work that you've mentioned there that people are already putting in, but they're going above, way above and beyond what, yeah, you know, you'd even expect.
Should if you were, be expected.
Yeah, yeah, if you were running a company and you were paying these guys, they're still going above and beyond what you'd expect to get out of them. And I think people need to understand that these volunteers are doing everything they can for us all to enjoy football.
Well, they are. We've got a core bank of volunteers, so probably somewhere between 30 and 50 at any one time, all of whom, in a normal game, a normal match day, in the build-up to a match day, working very hard all through the week, and then on a match day itself. So to be doing it in an environment where, you know, some greater or less degree, you're putting your personal safety, your personal health, and that of your close family and your close friends at risk for the sake of it, you're spot on. They are heroes, and they're the lifeblood of any club at non-league football, aren't they? We're so lucky to have them, and we're so lucky, as I say, the football can be on, that we can get a game on and be moving forward. Thankfully, I would also give praise to the supporters as well, certainly our supporters who come to our games, and the away supporters from Mask FC, Morpeth. I don't think Morpeth brought any. And some are coming over from Cleethorpe Town on Saturday. People do recognise that if we ask to take your temperature, you know, we're going to take it, or you're going away, you're going to wear the mask and keep it on. And you're going to use the one-way system. You're going to wash your hands. You're going to socially distance. And we've had a couple of mini grumbles, but we've had no major dissent. No one's been asked to leave the ground, which is you know, we're thankful for. And we're just really looking forward to our game on Saturday now against Cleethorpe Town.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, we've got the government not to encourage hordes of fans to go to the games, but while we can, let's make sure that fans can get down there and support. It's a weird world we live in, but it is the FA Trophy this weekend for you guys. Cleethorpe Town, you know, they're visiting. What does the FA Trophy mean to a club like you, who's so new to this competition?
Honestly, not a lot in the big scheme of things, and we say that in a very respectful way, because we're right on the low end of the totem pole, aren't we? At step four in the trophy, where you've got, you know, the big clubs in the national leagues and all of the Northern Premier Leagues and Southern Premier Leagues will join in as well. So we're not terribly hopeful. It's the only cup competition that we're entered into this season. So we've got a new manager in Michael Ellison. So I know that it will be important to get us a win or another good performance since Michael's took over, and to keep that momentum going for us. Prize money's nice. It's not quite the FA Cup, but it's still nice. There's quite a nice pot of money to play for on Saturday. We got a nice home tie. Bootle have put in a brand new hybrid pitch at the ground at the Berry Street Garage Stadium. So everything's in place for a cracking game. They've got some great players. Cleethorpes, we've had a couple of reports about them, a couple of big history. So we'll really and they were great as well, Tim, if I can just diverge back to Cleethorpe Town, and their volunteers and their committee didn't put us under any pressure whatsoever. There was so much confusion around this game for us for the last sort of 14 days because of Tier 3 as well, but the stadium was shut because of a COVID outbreak previously. And Cleethorpe Town was so patient with us and give us, you know, no pressure. Let's reverse the fixture, which we've had in the past. They just put us under no pressure whatsoever and said, just get yourselves sorted, lads and ladders. You know, just tell us what the details are. So very, very thankful for them. And we're looking forward to welcoming that club over to see us on Saturday. And hoping that we can get a win and get through into the next round and more prize money, ultimately.
Yeah. So it's been a fairly busy time then recently down your way. You mentioned Michael Ellison coming in. He's obviously got a great record at Runcorn Linnets before. Well, I think you were, was it three defeats in three? And then he came in and or change of fortune, shall we say?
Yeah. It's unfortunate because Craig Robinson, our previous manager, is such a great fella. And he won us the Northwest County League Premier Division in his first season and with the club.
Always very approachable and honest, and whenever I dealt with him as well.
well, you know, it sounds a silly thing to say at our level of football, but totally professional. I mean, he's not professional trade. He's like, you know, most managers at this level, you know, they're half a volunteer themselves. The amount of work that Craig put in terms of phone calls and driving around, signing players, preparing for training and games. Great fella, great family. But everything was in place. We said this between ourselves when after we got beaten at Workington away, 5-2, pretty poor performance really. And Craig rang me on the way back. He was on the team coach and asked for a meeting back at our Purple Hub, and myself and my colleague, he's a famous deputy, Craig. And we were all in agreement. Everything's in place. The training's great. The squad was great. You know, we've got a brand new training facility that we're using. The pitch at Bootle's fantastic. You know, we're training at Bootle on that pitch. So everything was right, except for results just weren't happening. Something was missing because results weren't happening. And so Craig, in his, again, approachable and very honest way, accepts that, you know, results are what counts. And so I wouldn't say we reluctantly accepted his resignation. We agreed that it was you know, a time for change for the club. So we went our separate ways. Michael, as you say, got a great reputation. We've always struggled against his teams because his teams are basically high intensity, like a Liverpool football team, to be fair. High intensity, high pressure, on the front foot, attacking all the time. And it was sort of a very natural fit when we spoke to Michael for a couple of days. We spoke to him on the Tuesday, we spoke to him on the Wednesday, and we just didn't think there was any point in extending the application process. So Michael's a great fella. He's come in and he has a rapid... He hasn't... Tonight, Tim, actually, is the first time the team's going to train under Michael. He's played two games with no training sessions. So to get a 5-2 win away at Brighouse, which is a very, very tough place to go, was amazing. You know, 2 days after he took over the job. And a 2-2 draw at Prescott Cables on Tuesday, which was another big, big, tough ask of him. And really... the performance was outstanding. So we're very, very hopeful. We've made a good decision with Michael. We made a good decision with Craig. And to be honest, we made a good decision with Simon Burton, who was our first ever manager. All of the lads have all done extremely well for us as a new club. And we're grateful to all to the two lads who've now passed on from the club. But we're looking forward to a new future under Michael.
Yeah, and you say about building a club, and you mentioned that the new training facilities you got there at the Purple Harbour, and you're now moving up through the steps. Is it as enjoyable with all the additional red tape and that goes with it when you're, you know, from where you started, where the philosophy?
We've just got so much passion for success, Tim, is the honest truth. And we come from a business background. Without getting political, we're socialists. You know, we're looking at things slightly different, like a lot of fan-owned clubs do. And we just have a passion and almost a grim determination, if that's the right word to use, for the club to be successful and to keep going. We've had two promotions in four seasons. Two promotions in three full seasons, and plus a null and void season. And we just want to see the club progress to its natural level. We don't think we're at its natural level yet. We haven't got our own stadium, so there's a sort of a natural sticking point. Mm-hmm. We have been able to take on the Purple Hub, and we're going to develop that as a first class training facility for our club, but also for the local area and the football clubs in the area. A stadium is the next step for us. And once that's in place, and once that's fully operational and running, and you know, God knows when that could be. It could be 6 months, it could be 6 years. That'll really be then we'll know our natural position in the pecking order of the National League system. And if that's in the Northern Premier League, great. If it's in the National League, fantastic. If it's beyond that, God forbid, you know, that's fantastic too. But whatever that natural position is that we find ourselves in, that's where we'll be fighting to stay.
And so refreshing to have such honesty from a chairman, and you know, you don't know, we don't know where football's going to be in 3 months' time, let alone where your football club's going to be. You're of course a new club, and which is not so common nowadays. But that we've got a number of Phoenix clubs again rising from the ashes. Unfortunately, there's going to be much more of those, I'm sure, in the coming years to come as well. And we've seen further plans for the new look Macclesfield this week. From your point of view, have you got any advice from those that are considering bringing a new club into existence? Is it go shopping instead? Go and do something else. Go and play golf.
Don't do it. It's a massive undertaking, Tim. I make this statement quite a lot. My job, my business, became my sort of me part time hobby, which I did for an hour at 11 o'clock at night. And my part time fun hobby of running a non league football club, that became me full time unpaid job, and still is. It's more than full time. You know, there's several others of directors who are putting 40 to 50 hours in a week for the football club, and 5 or 10 hours in our own lives, you know, our own jobs. We've all got families, obviously, and things of that nature. So don't do it is the answer, unless you're prepared for a massive, massive time commitment over a long period of time. Be prepared for infighting and hostility and lies and deceit and brilliant fun times. Some of the best times of my life. I've followed Liverpool Football Club all over the country and all over Europe for 30, 40 years before I did this. Great times watching Liverpool win things with your mates and what have you. But winning that treble in our first season will never ever be forgotten. And winning the Premier Division of the North West Counties League in our third season, those are memories that I wouldn't swap for the world, Tim. We achieved something. We've got a little tiny piece of our own histories to, you know, that our families can be proud of in the future. We've done something, we've achieved something. So don't do it unless you're ready for a life changing experience, because that's what it's going to be. And it's not all roses either. Most of it is hard grind and work to get to the point where sometimes you can be on the pitch at the end of a season celebrating with 300, 400 other delirious people because you've won the league or you've won the cup or, you know, whatever you've done. So it's worth it, but it's very, very hard.
I feel your pain, and then that pride you've got in your club and the people around you. Everybody in non-league has got a similar pride in yourself and everybody up and down the country that does a similar job, because... The problem is, we do this show, there's the non-league paper, there's loads of other shows like us now that push the message of non-league, but we don't get the national headlines that the other people in the pro game get, where they don't see this pain lower down. And it's this pain that people go through, which means that football's on the telly, that football's doing that deal, and that's, I guess that's where you guys came from originally, wasn't it? It's to get back to enjoying football and everybody enjoying football.
It was about love. People have said, you know, what did you do? You know, who were you protesting against and all the rest of it? It wasn't about that. It was about pain. As a middle-aged football supporter, or there was a group of us middle-aged football supporters, the pain of the Premier League and globalisation and watching all the money and all the razzmatazz and what have you. So there was an aspect of that, of just wanting to get back to basics, and that's what we did. But we weren't protesting against anything, just wanted to do it. We couldn't help ourselves. We'd done some market research in the city, and we could see a gap in the market. The market reached, sort of justified what we were thinking. It proved that we were sort of probably right in what we were doing, and we committed to doing it. We think we've sort of done it well. Ups and downs, like everyone, every business will have, every non-league football has all the time. But we think we've been a really big success story for non-league football. One or two other clubs have said, you know, we lit a fire under them as well. A new club turning up, not everyone likes new football clubs, do they? You know, in fact, in non-league, there's very few people who do like new non-league clubs. So we think we lit a fire locally on the non-league teams. And we've done it well, I think. You know, we've got big crowds. We're still averaging just shy of 400 attendance 4 years down the line. So it hasn't faded away, all the initial buzz and everything. And we know from people's faces and from their Facebook posts and the photos that they put up, the memories, Twitter, we brought happiness into people's lives. And that, you know, you can't buy that, Tim. It's that simple.
And
can't buy happiness, can you?
And simple is it. I quite often say to people, it doesn't matter what technology, what gadgets, what new philosophies, strategies you come up with, it kids get it right. They understand the simple things that work. And actually, your red joining and merging with blue, every little kid knows that that makes purple, and it's made purple and it's made perfect.
To be honest, that's a fallacy. That, you know, that was a banner, but someone made that banner because Johnny Phillips from Sky Sports came and saw us quite early on at one game, and someone brought that banner, red and blue equals purple. We never said that. That's nothing to do with our club, to be honest, Tim. But we've enjoyed the little, you know, the recognition that it brings. Purple is the colour of Liverpool, is the civic colour of Liverpool, that's all. And that was the civic colour long before Liverpool and Everton existed. Or Liverpool used to play in blue at one time, didn't he? So red and blue equals purple. But the city is purple anyway, the civic colours, and that's what we chose, to be fair. But it does make for a handy little...
It's a great little story, as is the story of your club. And hopefully the club will... Well, the whole city will be purple this weekend and getting behind you in the FA Trophy. Paul Manning, I'm sure we could probably talk for days, if not weeks. Yeah. But yeah. I'll leave you, because I'm sure you've got another... probably 10 hours left in the day to fill in with club work. So it's been great to have you on the Non-League Football Show, and best of luck for the season.
Thanks very much for having me, Tim. Appreciate it.
So let's round up this week's non-league news, and it's head on over back to non-league paper towels, or virtual non-league paper towels. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, to David Richardson, senior writer at the Non-League Paper. Hello, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
The week's gone. The week's gone it's so quickly. What have I done? I've been to cash and carry. I've swept the dressing room. I've done help with the laundry. Yeah, these are the things that are involved in non-league football. And then we get to talk about it as well. So we get to talk about it, get to write about it. I've got a bumper report to write, hopefully this weekend, for the non-league paper as well. Looking forward to that one. Hayes and Yedding against Truro City. Mm. So if I get any facts wrong, please don't hammer me on Twitter on Sunday morning. It would have been a long Saturday. Anyway, let's talk about the non-league world. Last week we spoke about the National League. We've spoken to Dave Challen already today at Hartlepool this week, at top of the table. We've had clubs come into the FA Cup with the fourth qualifying round drawn today as well. But still doesn't seem to be any decision on how this money from the government will be handed down or split up.
No, not yet. Still waiting to hear a bit more detail on that. It's all sort of rather quiet, really, I think. And clubs were already sort of a little bit worried last week, and I think they still very much are now, really, in terms of waiting for that information. I think, clubs are sort of banging on the National League's door a little bit to try and find out what's happening.
Yeah, the debate was as to whether the season would get underway, and now the season's, well, quite underway now, because we're getting the other competitions are coming through and getting involved, and I guess it's a bit like going on holiday without having your salary in your bank at the moment, isn't it? Is it sort of they're going ahead, but on the promise that there's some money that's going to help them see it through, because any other additional revenue streams, particularly with further tiering coming in and other areas coming under the different tiers, they're going to become even more reliant on any funding or handouts that are going to become available to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's the thing, really, is sort of how long can these clubs go in, effectively sort of paying wages and paying costs of putting on these games. Of effectively sort of no money coming in. It's clearly sort of a cash flow problem at the moment. I think the National League sort of did accept that would be the case for, perhaps the sort of time being, but we sort of can't really be coming to a situation at the end of November where, clubs still haven't sort of had this money land in their bank accounts yet. So, yeah, it's a bit of a concern, really. You know, you would have maybe thought that there would have been some sort of update or some sort of communication, really, from the National League or the GCMS or someone as to what the latest was on this. But, no, it is very quiet.
And it's a point I made with Paul Manning earlier, the chairman at City of Liverpool, where non-league's just got on with it. The people at clubs have got on and just done what they do week in, week out. And we're getting football on and it's going ahead, but still without the full knowledge. And we spoke so many times in last season's show, effectively, talking about that, you know, people need to be planning. We need to put some strategy in place and that. And yet still non-league seems to be moving from, well, week to week, really, and sort of hand to mouth, effectively.
Yeah, that's right. It's very difficult at the moment, really, knowing sort of what the next week will happen in the next week, really. You know, but we've seen in the last few days, obviously, this new tier system that's come into place, and sort of almost the arguments that are happening in different areas as to what sort of tier level, you know, they should go into and things like that, and sort of the knock-on effects and whether that will, you know, bring in things like reduced capacities. You know, I've seen the London FA sort of put out that sort of clubs in that region would be affected by 15% and things like that, and fans would have to be wearing face coverings during games. You know, these are the sort of things we're still dealing with at the moment. And, you know, to be honest, I don't want to sound sort of too doom and gloom, but, you know, really the sort of outlook at the moment sort of isn't great. And I think there's very much this sort of feeling of, let's try and keep this going for as long as we can, really. You know, it had been sort of more of a thing of, oh, can we get the capacities up at, you know, steps three and below? But now it's more of a case of let's just get to the first sort of whistle as such, really, in terms of getting these games on.
And I think you're right there. I think football now almost needs to be realistic that there's a good chance that certain leagues are going to have to even, you know, lock down, postpone, or just have a little break if the area that they operate in becomes a difficult area to get people out and about to go and watch some football, even just players to get to football. Where, you know, we hope that it won't mean early curtailment for the seasons, and that hopefully things will be able to pick up and things will improve and we'll be able to get forward. I don't want to see the headline it'll all end in tears or anything like that. You know, I'm trying to think of the puns that I could come up with from my old days as a sub-editor, but there's I certainly know from lower down levels that there's certain clubs that are trying to front load at the moment and score as many goals as possible in the hope or maybe expectation or maybe just trying to cover all bases, that if the season was curtailed early, and that they would be at the top of the league, and then that might get them promotion and things like that. And it's all the fears that we probably discussed 5 or 6 months ago are potentially going to become reality, which is a shame for football. But again, wouldn't want to be in the position of those that are having to make these decisions, because it's a hard world. But we're moving into the FA Trophy this weekend, the second qualifying round, and we've still not played last season's finals yet, and that's still going to be an issue. It's going to come a time soon when Concord Rangers, as a Step 2 side, will join the competition this season whilst technically still in last season's competition.
Yeah, it's very strange. Of course, you've got Harrogate, who are obviously a League Two club now, who are in the final of the FA Trophy of last season's FA Trophy. So, yeah, a very strange one and unique, of course, for the competition. But, no, like you say, plenty of fixtures this weekend as this year's the trophy continues. I mean, we've got bumper coverage of it again in the paper on Saturday. You know, it's sort of difficult to almost keep up with these cup competitions at the moment. You've got the FA Cup draw that happened today. You know, we're well advanced into that. You've got the FA Bard as well, and all these fixtures, like you say, that teams maybe sort of trying to front load and score goals. But I think sort of the fixture schedulers and the leagues are doing similar, really, with getting all these games in at the start. You know, the weather sort of hasn't been great, although we haven't lost too many games from it, which is of course something else we probably have to consider in the next couple of months in terms of games being on. But yeah, it's certainly been a hectic start to the season. Like you say, it's sort of the days fly by and suddenly there's more games and there's more sort of points being won and more teams getting through in cups as well. It's difficult to keep up a little bit, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we've got a bumper a second round qualifying in the FA Trophy, which you say people can read about in Sunday's paper. And I have to say, I put my hands up. I was one of the traditionalists that loves a replay. But this week, looking at the number of games in the FA Cup, certainly that went to penalty shootouts, it seemed to be exciting for everybody there. It wasn't too exciting for me at my game because we got through in the end. But if you're too connected to a club, it can be a big strain on the bits and pieces. It does seem that the penalty shootouts are helping the competitions move along and build that excitement.
Yeah, I think it was a good idea scrapping replays, this season because, there's just sort of too many fixtures to get in, really. And then if there are games being called off because of the weather and then it goes to a replay, things become very difficult then and clubs simply don't need that. Perhaps the only thing I would say is it's a little bit of a surprise there's no extra time. Obviously, the games go straight to penalties, as you say, we've seen quite a lot of that. And I suppose it's probably good from an upsets point of view because, teams lower down against higher opposition maybe thinking if we can just get through the 90, get to penalties, and then, we'll sort of got a ticket for the lottery, really, in a sense there. So, I think a few managers have sort of been saying that they would have preferred extra time because an extra half an hour, probably isn't too strenuous maybe on sort of players despite the busy schedule. And, I think clubs perhaps don't always want to go to that penalty shootout lottery either. It certainly makes for things to be exciting. And like I say, certainly has produced some upsets as well, which is, of course, the sort of almost the point of the FA Cup in a way.
I do wonder whether the government's curfew of 10 p.m. maybe maybe someone knew somewhere that the deep depths of their brain that's the reason why we've gone straight to penalty shootouts rather than extra time.
It just
fits the timescale better for everybody. Who knows? Things have a reason for coming about, don't they? And talking about their reasons coming about, the FA Cup draw earlier today. We're just speaking on Thursday. There's some interesting ties there, which I'm sure again we'll cover next week and you will as well. But King's Lynn against Notts County looks a cracker.
Yeah, some really interesting ties in there. Obviously, it's the final qualifying round before the first round proper when League One and Two clubs come in, which is always sort of a massive day on the calendar, really, each year. Obviously the fourth round qualifying draw is always going to be an interesting one. It's split into two, the northern section and the south section. Like you say there, yeah, King's Lynn at home to Notts County, an all National League tie. I think King's Lynn have done a pretty good job of settling into their new division so far, and Notts County have looked very good as well. There's some other great ties in there. Stockport against Chesterfield, South Shields against FC Halifax, Solihull Moors, Wrexham, Stafford Rangers at home to Scarsdale as well. So loads to sort of whet the appetite, really. Of course, it's always sort of the downside of it is that a lot of these games fans aren't going to be allowed in. One that particularly stands out, sort of a local derby between Aldershot and Woking. That would have been a really healthy crowd there for that FA Cup tie had fans been allowed in. But nonetheless, I think there still is that excitement around the FA Cup. You've got Maldon and Tiptree going for the first round again. They're at home to Hammering Gate Borough. Dagenham are hosting Hartley Whitney, which is another interesting time. Barnet going to Leiston as well. So everywhere you look, really, there's a sort of tie and almost sort of an upset that you can see coming in a way. So yeah, really sort of interesting cup draw, and looking forward to next weekend when those ties take place.
Yeah, and obviously, I texted the manager there, because I feel that you create your own luck over time, and one of the nicest people in football, Jamie Vermiglio at Chorley, he's not had the greatest of 12 months on in terms of football terms, the way the season ended for them there, but they've ended up with a bye into the first round, so I'm sure they'll be I know Chorley have been very happy with that, because something like that just lifts the club, and I think that the prize money's guaranteed as well, and that they know that they've got that opportunity of Football League opposition. However it comes about, you know, it's unlikely to be in front of fans, but it's still a big carrot they've been given the carrot, really, haven't they? And they've started to munch on it. But so. Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of excitement up in Chorley. I guess you've already said that this weekend we're going to be able to read all about the FA Trophy. There's plenty of stuff going on across the leagues as well. Anything about the new look Macclesfield that we've got ahead of us?
Yes, absolutely. That was sort of one of the great sort of good news stories, I suppose, of this week and perhaps this period. You know, obviously the club was wound up in the High Court over debts of around £500,000. That obviously led to their expulsion from the National League, which was confirmed on Monday. Almost sort of no sooner had the final nail sort of been put in, was the club back up and running again. Local businessman Robert Smithurst has taken over the sort of assets of Macclesfield Town, which is effectively Moss Rose. And the plan is to restart as Macclesfield FC. Now obviously this season's already commenced, so they'll have to come in next year. And that looks like they'll start in the Northwest Counties League as well, which is down at step 5 and 6. So I should think they'll probably be in the Division 1 North, which is step 6. But no, exciting times for them there. Robbie Savage is getting involved. Mm. He's a friend of Robert Smethurst, you know, and of course, you know, we sort of all know his sort of top flight background and playing for Wales, and obviously now he's heavily involved in the media, but he, you know, really, really, really likes grassroots football and lower league football. He's often sort of a voice for the grassroots game, really, particularly as we've seen in the last sort of 7-8 months, you know, in the sort of briefings that we've seen on TV and things like that. And Danny Whittaker's going to be the new manager there as well. Very much a Silkman legend, played for the club over about 11 seasons, 39 years of age. I think he was still planning on playing for the club this year under Tim Flowers, but obviously that all sort of quickly came to an end with the winding up order. So, yeah, we're running a couple of pages on Macclesfield this Sunday. I've spoken to sort of all the people there: Robbie Savage, Danny Whittaker, Robert Smethurst, John Smart, who's a board member of the Silkman Supporters Trust, but he's also going to be on the new board as well. So really exciting times there, and I think they've sort of got big plans for the club. They're going to relay the pitch and put down a 3G service, which obviously has major impact on the local community, and you're able to sort of build a football club from that way. So as much as it's sad that the sort of history of Macclesfield Town came to an end, you know, it seems like there's a very bright future for Macclesfield FC, which is good to see, and we'll look forward to following their rise. That undoubtedly they will make that.
Yeah, and as you say, it's always good to have a good news story as well amongst everything else that's going on there. Well, David, we look forward to reading about that in the non-league paper on Sunday. Thank you for joining us once again, and we'll speak to you again soon.
No problem, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
So that's it for this week. Thank you to Dave Anderson for joining me, for all of our guests, and for all of you at home, at work, in cars, in on your train, on the terraces, or wherever you may listen to this podcast. This is by the fans and definitely for the fans, so your support can never be forgotten. And I appreciate the comments on last week's rant as well. I actually quite enjoyed it. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson's at Dave Anderson 78, myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, of course, you can listen to us every week on Audio Boom. Find us on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, all good podcast aggregation sites, many, many more sites as well. Take a look there too for the Non-League Gaffer Tapes, which Dave hopefully will bring back very soon. It's just difficult to do at the moment, but we will get there. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A, J-A-B-B-A. At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.